You're listening to the Creative Seat Podcast, where the curious and creative come to listen and be inspired. I'm Samantha K. Henderson, independent producer and your host. If you're interested in finding out more about me or our guests, visit the website at www.thecreativeseat.com. Thanks to Filmcraft Studio Gear for sponsoring this episode. Visit their website, www.filmcraftla.com, and pick up a customizable studio director chair today. It's legit my favorite creative seat. Filmcraft does so many great things in the community, and I'm proud to be part of the Filmcraft LA family. Our guest on this episode is Dawn Spinella. She's an award-winning writer, director, and producer with multiple short films active on the film festival circuit. She won the Alfred P. Sloan Award for Screenwriting and was nominated for the Humanitas Award while a grad student in the Screenwriting MFA program at UCLA. Dawn is also a filmmaking mentor for the Youth Cinema Project, Latino Film Institute, and currently in development as a producer-director on a faith-based feature. Her bio is impressive. Now let's get her in the creative seat. Dawn, we're going to talk about transformational screenwriting. But before we dive into that, please tell the audience about yourself and how you came to writing and directing.
Oh, okay. Well, hi, Sam. Thank you for having me here. It's awesome to be talking with you. So I had a really interesting childhood, and I discovered television kind of late in life and films. I grew up a lot in the mountains, and you could say that I was like a little wild animal raised by some hippies off the grid. And I think because I was raised that way, it sparked a lot of imagination because, you know, I had to play in the woods and create games and stories and all of that to keep myself occupied. And I read like crazy. And I remember, though, when I reached my teen years and I saw a few films. Cinema Paradiso was one of them. Room with a View was another, the Merchant Ivory film. And I thought, holy cow, these are amazing. And it was in that moment where I thought, this would be an art that I would love to be involved with. I don't know how. I don't know what. But it sparked something in me. And then later on, I ended up getting involved with acting and in theater. And I fell in love with words. I'd been reading forever anyway. I loved words. But when I started reading like Tennessee Williams, I went, oh my gosh, you get to create a whole world with these words. And at that point, I was like, oh, acting's so limited. It's the writing that you get to create the worlds with, you know? I knew that I wanted to write. I was in theater and I continued to act, but then I started to direct and just produce theater, always being creative, and started doing a little bit of writing. And it was at that point where I decided that I would one day go on to get my MFA at UCLA, because I thought that in order to be a writer, you really had to study and learn. At that point, I wasn't even aware of what a script was necessarily, a screenplay. I knew about plays, but I wasn't really aware of screenplays because I wasn't in that industry yet. And it was after leaving the stage, because acting became, it was like, it absorbed too much of my evenings, and I started acting on camera. That's when I discovered that, oh, this is the route into film. And that just, you know, circular, I just went that route. And knowing me, I like doing one thing isn't enough. I'm curious and interested, and I want to understand lots of things. But that's how I moved into this realm. I did study in my undergrad. I studied film and television and radio. My first script that I wrote was horrible. Horrible. I had no idea what I was doing. And then a friend of mine said, oh, you should read this book, Lou Hunter's 434. And I went, oh, holy cow. And it kind of gave you a breakdown of how you could write and how you should write. And it was the beginning. And, you know, Lou Hunter was the chair at UCLA for a long time. He developed the television writing program there. And to me, that was just like, yep, one day I'm going to study with this man. I know it. I'm just going to be there one day to really understand writing. And eventually I did. A lot of other things happened between that day and the day that I finally made it in. I had a child, and
that was completely derailed everything. But I was sitting in class with Lou Hunter and got my degree. And I'll tell you what, when I showed up at UCLA, I didn't know anything about structure, knew nothing. It was my weak point. Because I'd been acting, dialogue came very easily and naturally, and understanding character motivation was also in there already. But I didn't understand how to craft something to actually be able to tell the story. And of course, there's so much more than just that. That's the long version of how I came around.
No, that's inspirational. And what I took away from what you said is, even though there were a lot of things that happened in between setting a goal for yourself and getting there, you didn't change your mind. You didn't let the things in between stop you. So that's always a positive, and something I like to restate is, like, most of us who are doing something or creating something, life is happening while you're trying to create. So you really have to find ways to push through.
Absolutely, Sam. And you know, the thing is, like, life kept happening and happening and happening, because if you don't have a goal for yourself that you stay focused on, it's very easy to get pulled to the side, right? To get distracted. And you meet a guy, or you do this, or you meet somebody else, or, oh, this job offer comes up and it's too hard to resist the money. You know, all these things start happening, just like a character in your play, in your screenplay. If you don't keep that goal focused, it's too easy to get distracted. And then the years are gone instantly. I kept circling back to it. And that's how I knew it was the area that it was that passion rather than a vocation. It was the avocation.
Right, right. This is good. So, and it leads us into our topic a bit, right? Talking about transformational screenwriting. Let's define that. Can you tell us what transformational screenwriting is?
So for me, transformational screenwriting is about creating it's about creating a change in the audience as much as it is about creating characters who experience change. But even more importantly than that, it's being able to write something that can profoundly affect an audience and have an impact on them, something that can actually change a belief system or make them begin to question a belief system. To me, that's really powerful.
That's good. So it's like a character arc for the audience.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Our audience, you know, you guys know what we're talking about there. So is there a process that you go through when you begin to write a script with this transformation in mind?
Yeah, well, that's a big one, right? There's so many processes. The first one is knowing what it is you want to achieve with the story, what it is that you want the audience to experience. I always say, what is it you want your audience to experience when I teach? What do you want them to experience? Because they could experience a really frightening film, you know, and just be scared, right? That's cool. That's great. That's pure entertainment. They could experience a love story. They could experience humor. All of that's wonderful and great. But if you want them to experience a shift in beliefs or to begin to even approach that, you really have to know what that is, what that belief system is, and why it is that you think this can be addressed. And there are a lot of big issues out there in the world that need that kind of focus and attention. You can't address huge, huge, huge issues all at once. You know, it takes that melting down like a, you know, water on a pebble. It takes time. But for your story to begin to make that kind of impact, you have to start somewhere. And so it's always that, what is that change that you want to begin?
Just in keeping with transformational screenwriting and the process, how important is story to you then as a filmmaker?
Well, for me as a filmmaker, story is everything. The whole experience hinges on a story. And if you don't have something strong and interesting and worth telling, then it's just going to bore your audience. Also, if you don't have a strong story, it's going to be really hard to make. Story is the foundation of everything, in my opinion. A lot of people rush into films without really fleshing out their story, and they do a disservice to themselves and to their audience. For years and years, and even today, I still do it. Everything I watch, I analyze, and it's just become second nature. I can't help it, unfortunately, because for a long time, watching films became something I didn't enjoy doing after I'd been analyzing and analyzing and analyzing. So I'm trying to find the joy in watching films again, but I can't help but analyze them because you can tell a story so many ways, right? There's so many ways to tell a story, and it's going to hit everybody differently. So my analysis is just one of many opinions, but I always look for why something doesn't work and how I would have done it in order to make it work, or what are you trying to achieve? And so how would we do that? So back to your question, story is everything. Without a story, you don't have a story.
Yeah, I'm curious, do you keep a running log of some of this analysis, like, or do you just keep it in your head to use for the future?
Sometimes I write things down. I do have a lot of notes on different things. Oftentimes it's just a insight that I'll experience for no good reason. I'm driving along and I'm like, oh my gosh, this. But I'll tell you, like last night I watched a film that was out a few years ago or earlier this year. And the reviews, I watched it because the reviews were really interesting. It compared it to a Mamet film. It had very interesting. It had all these great kind of reviews. But one said you could see the twists coming. And I'm like, okay, let me see. So of course I sat down to watch it and I'm like, oh, well, yeah, here's the grift right now. And this is the grift. And then this is also going on and this is going. So you could see them all coming a mile away. I could. And it said that the end wasn't impactful. And so I wanted to see for myself. So I watched I watched it through the end and I'm like, oh man, it totally fizzled out. So that's where I sat and went, okay, how could I have made this work? What ending would have worked here? How far back do you have to go in the story in order to set up an ending? And of course, the whole time I'm going, okay, would I have switched this around? And could I have switched this around? And could I have done this because you're expecting this? You know, in screenwriting, it's about circumventing or not delivering on the expected. So you can also use that expectation to thwart the expectation. So in other words, if you know that this is a grifter film, and the audience is expecting the grift right away. Okay, so you set it up, you made that grift, but you better set up the anti-grift early on, like there, because I want to be tricked. If you make it too easy, you lose your audience. So in that case, because I'm thinking about it, I'll just remember that. I'll just know, like, I should write it down, but I rely on my memory. Probably a terrible habit.
I do the same. So it's a process of, I know what I like, I know what I don't like. So when I'm reviewing a script that I've written, I kind of go through the thoughts about like what I don't like, what I do like, and see how it applies to this like new script. You know, also try not to repeat myself, too much. Mm-hmm. That's good. Audience, pay attention to that. So that's a tool that you could use.
It's all about knowing what your audience expects and then somehow making sure that they don't get what they expect, they get something different and better. Because if you meet expectation, it's often boring.
Right.
Because they expect it. Right. So you have to switch that up.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about you being a multi-hyphenate. So as a writer, director, and producer, how do you focus or separate each one of these key roles and then find balance there?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, I guess it depends. I remember, Sam, when we worked together on something and you said to me, okay, Dawn, it's time to take off your producer hat.
Yes.
And I think about that now and then. I just laugh and go, Sam had a very good way of just holding the situation together and saying, here it is.
Yeah.
So sometimes I have to be pushed into a role, mm-hmm. And told where I have to go. But mostly the writing stuff takes place so early on. So that doesn't tend to be an issue after the script is finished and it's ready to go. And I do see myself, though, always, even as a director, as partly a producer, because if you're not paying attention, things can fall through the cracks. So I don't know if that's just my, if that's a control issue, but I am constantly aware of things, and it's really good to be in that position. I don't think it's that easy for me to just step away from playing multiple roles But in order to do so, you just have to know, you have to make sure that you're surrounded by really good people that you trust and that you know can take care of things, and that communication has happened, that there aren't large gaps for people to fall, you know, for information to get lost in or for things to part in. So I guess it just comes down to trust and working with really good people that you know, get the job done.
Right. So now we're getting into the conversation of collaborators. So how do you find your collaborators, and what type of qualities are you looking for in them?
You know, collaboration is one of the most priceless lessons you can learn about filmmaking, because it is a collaborative art. Learning to be a leader is also about learning to let go of things, right? So let that person do their job and let that other person do their job and let that person do, you know, so you bring these people in so that everybody can do a job. So in order to be able to do your own job, you have to know that they can all do theirs and you have to let them do that. So when you work with people, you find out whose style you like, whose personality you like, who is easy to work with, who gets the job done. You find out what works for you. And those are the people that you want to hold on to and collaborate with. Those are the people that you want to work with as much as you can. And collaboration is really the oil that keeps the machine turning. And it will take a one-dimensional film idea and turn it into something beautiful that you didn't consider. So it's very often hard for new writers, and I've been there myself, to take feedback, because they get defensive, you know, or we get defensive and we don't want to change this, or, you know, we think we know. And I've been through it enough, both as the writer part and as reading material. But that in itself is a collaboration. And when you can begin to hear, even at the early stages, and examine your own material and say, okay, why am I getting this note? Or why am I getting this feedback? What does that mean here? It's going to open your eyes to becoming a far better writer. And it allows you to go into a room to be able to work with a lot of different people. You don't always have to take everybody's notes. You need to listen. And often the note under the note or the note that they're giving isn't exactly what they're trying to say. It may apply to something else. So as far as writing goes, it's such a lonely sport. You know, it really helps to have other people, collaborators that you can at least turn to. I've found that unless I'm working, like I've got different projects in different stages of production, and I've been working on a novel for a lot of years. And that's my novel, and that's me. And as much as I would love to have help with it, I know that I can't, because the words that come out of me for that are mine. And it's so different than like a screenplay, where the feature that I'm working on right now, I had outlined completely and written the first 15 pages when I brought in somebody, a friend of mine, and said, I want you to work with me on this because I need push and I need somebody to work with because I'm so busy. And I brought this other person in to start writing where I'd left off. And then I came back in and started doing rewrites. And that kind of a collaboration, I realized, worked really well for me, because I'm a fast rewriter, but sometimes getting, you know, the first draft out is not always that easy. Well, it's not easy at all.
Oh yeah, that makes sense too. Because if there's a thought there, you can go back to that analysis, right, and see what's working, not working, and kind of quickly resolve what's not working.
Mm-hmm.
I had not thought of writing as a collaborative sport, but it is, and it can be, and it can work very well in terms of expanding a story, right? Like those checks and balances. Is this character working? Is this plot working? How do I create this world that relates to someone other than me? So you just gave me a great idea. I might have to use that.
I absolutely think you should. Now that I've used it, I don't necessarily want to go back to doing it the other way. It was so productive and so helpful. Does distinctly or deliberately chose somebody who had strengths that I didn't have. And because it's a faith-based film, she has a lot of experience in the faith world. And I thought, this will be really helpful. Now, she went some crazy directions. God love her. She just did some amazing stuff that I never would have thought of.
Okay.
You know, and that's cool because that's where it needed to go. Of course, I pulled it back in to, you know, the direction that I wanted it to go in. But without her wild creativity, it might have just been, you know, stuck in my own little avenue. I think that being able to do that requires you to not be precious about your own work. I had an instructor who would say, don't be precious, don't be precious, don't be precious. It took a long time to get that into my head. And being precious is that owning it and not wanting to take anybody's notes and not wanting to change anything and not wanting to throw anything out and just thinking that everything is just right the way you have it. Oh, hell no. Don't be precious. Don't be precious. But the novel I'm more precious with, even, okay, you know, somebody could step in and help out. But right now it's just me. I almost feel like my novel's more of a poetry where the screenplay is a big picture, you know?
Join the community and spark creative conversation. Share what inspires, motivates, or triggers your creative self. We're on Instagram and Facebook at The Creative Seat.
Yeah, so I'm going to look forward to reading that novel, Dawn, when it's published. So,
oh, man, me too. Me too. I'm halfway through. I've been halfway through for a long time.
Yeah, no, I get it.
I did want to say that the transformational screenwriting, that is a book on transformational screenwriting. My second, I think it was the second script I wrote after I got into UCLA, was a script about my grandmother. And the second script I wrote about my grandmother at UCLA. And it was a biopic. And I got really into biopics. And I started studying and trying to understand, how do you write a biographical story? And I studied with Dustin Lance Black, and he had written Milk. And I don't know if you've noticed in me, when I get interested in something, I really start absorbing as much as I can it and studying and doing that. So I had started studying that, and I realized that all the biographical people I was interested in were transformational.
Okay.
They had a transformational impact on society or others in the world somehow. And I think that's where that joined for me, because I really thought, oh, wow, okay, what if we could take that transformational journey of that person that impacts society in real life and put that into a story, you know, that isn't necessarily their life, but any kind of story. So I started working on this, just a screenwriting book on transformational screenwriting, expecting to be done within the next month and a half to 2 months. And I'm going to be looking for beta readers, actually. So
I'll raise my hand.
I would love that. I would love that. I need feedback. I'm not precious. I want some good feedback, anything. Okay. So eventually I want to follow up with a biographical story because I've written so many now.
Okay. Yeah, no, we're going to look forward to that. I wanted to go back just a bit because you talked about your faith-based feature film. So can you tell us more about that project?
Yes, absolutely. So have you ever been sitting around with a friend, somebody, and you guys just start batting ideas around? And you're like, this would make a great story. What if this and what if that and da, da, da. Right. Okay. So that's kind of how this story came about. And I had never intended to write anything that was really faith-based. But then when I looked at what I've written, everything, almost everything had some connection to God in it, in one way or another, whether it was about a homosexual and the church. It was my grandmother, a scientist who grappled with God. It was like there were always these levels of God within my scripts. And I realized I really found that interesting. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to try my hand at a purely faith-based script that feels more like a Hallmark film. I figured I would end up producing it.
Okay.
So we get started. We're brainstorming these different ideas. And I end up working on this project with this guy whose daughter wants to get into filming and she wants to be an actress. And I said, you know, I've got this great story that I think she would be perfect for. And so as it turns out, he's very faith-based and had wanted to start working, producing faith-based films. So that mesh, it just started happening. So now we're working together and we expect to start shooting in a few months.
So, oh, that's wonderful. So we'll get to bring you back once you are ready to release that, because I'd love to be part of that. And, you know, I'll show up to your premiere.
Absolutely. Oh, thank you. Wonderful. Yeah. That'll be fun. That's my first, I think my first directing. Yeah. My first directing feature.
It's a bigger job, right? Than the shorts. It's a lot of work. The shorts can be a lot of work. So don't get me wrong. We spent a year working on a short. So I get it. But feature, that's even a larger endeavor. So I'm rooting for you. I know it's going to be great. And I look forward to just sharing the success of that. I know you got other things happening too. So you're going to be teaching screenwriting. Do you want to expand on that?
So I've been teaching screenwriting for a while, quite a few years. And a few years ago, Access Sacramento contacted me, and that's how we met, actually.
Yes,
you came to Access Sacramento. They have writers, well, anybody can take the class, but Access does this really cool thing called a place called Sacramento Screenwriting Filmmaking Competition. And then they end up helping produce in one way or another 10 short films that they premiere at this wonderful theater downtown. They had me come in to teach the class, and they do short films. They're up to 10 minutes. But the information that I teach is applicable to features or shorts or, you know, whichever length you're doing. So I have been doing that class now, I'm not sure, for 4 or 5 years. And we'll be doing it again on January 27th and February 3rd. It's 2 hours. And I love hearing the stories that come out of it. And I ask the students to come in with their log lines ready to go about what ideas they have. And then I try and help shape those ideas into 10-minute stories that they can tell. And sometimes, you know, their ideas are all over the place, and sometimes they're very concise, and sometimes they just need more development. What the structure of that should be, what it looks like for 10 minutes, because you don't want to ramble in, you know, 10 minutes. You don't have any time to waste if you want to tell a strong and fast story that moves your audience. So that's coming up, and it's a great opportunity. It's very inexpensive. I'm not sure what they charge anymore, but you would contact Access Sacramento if, you know, somebody wanted to take it.
I did participate in a workshop, and I was the student that walked in without an idea. I think we had our day one, and I listened to you, and I went home and still didn't have any idea. And then on the Thursday before the Friday, where you wanted us to submit the scripts ahead of our Saturday workshop day, I hand wrote a script at work. And then I had to go home and type it up. And I was thinking, like, oh, I don't know, like, Don's probably going to be like poo-pooing on my little script that I felt like I just put out there. It was a fictional story, but based on characters in my life. So my dad and my brother. And I don't know if it's because it was Don being my instructor or like I actually am a great writer. I don't know. But I ended up being selected for a place called Sacramento that year and went on to win the Producer's Choice Award. So thank you, Don. That was a great experience. And you did not poo-poo on my script. But you did make me work on it. So going back to her, like really focusing on the story and the characters and like your thought process, she did make me think, which helped with the revisions because there were like revisions after that initial draft. But the workshop is really good and helpful. And again, she's right. It applies to like all of your writing. I use those techniques in feature films that I'm working on.
That's awesome. I'm so glad to hear that story. I love that we met there. I vaguely remember, I remember the story completely, but thinking about the script, one, I didn't feel like it was a new writer script that you had turned in. And two, I would never poo-poo on anybody's story. And three, I don't think your story actually needed a whole lot of work. I think it needed a little bit of focus. You had the nuts and bolts. So you were just there. Either you were listening really well and you said, okay, this is how I'm going to apply it, or else you just have this great knack, or you've been doing it for a little while. I was really impressed. And I think with a little bit of shaping, I don't think your story took all that much to shape it up. And I can tell when I read, first of all, when I hear the idea, and two, if the writer will listen to me, they'll get in. Chances are they're going to be accepted. If the story works as a family friendly kind of story. But you have to really, again, it's like, writers not being so attached to their version of it. Right. And that's fine if you are, but if your goal is to just write your version of it, then that's fine. If your goal is to get into this competition and see where you can go with it, then you need to listen to the direction to get there.
Right. And we could even expand that a bit too. So if your goal as a writer is to get into a competition or get the film made, you need a producer, you need a director to be attached to it. You need production designers, you need a whole team, and they have to buy in to the story based on that script that you have. So it's really important to be focused and to take the feedback that Dawn is talking about. So
in the first year that I taught it, there was one gal that I had sent her so many rewrites. She just kept sending it over again, I'm like, okay, well, fix me to do this, whatever. And she told me at one point, she said she was in tears because she just, like, how many times am I going to have to do these rewrites? But we worked on Smash and I did like 15 or 20 rewrites of that thing because it changed, constantly kept changing. We'll never know exactly why, but it did. And I was probably in tears. But yeah, so I fondly now call my class "There Will Be Tears" screenwriting.
Oh yeah, I like that. I like that.
I lightened up a little bit. If you want to keep sending it to me, I'll keep giving you those. Yeah. At some point, you're going to have to say enough.
Right. It's like, when do you say I'm done? And that's a skill in itself. The start could be hard. To start any creative endeavor could be hard because life is happening all the time. But also knowing when to say you're done is also another skill that we have to develop. Dawn, I want to ask you, just because I think it's the right question. Do you have a project that you are most proud of and why?
I'm really proud of the one that I wrote about my grandmother. I had known my grandmother she was a young woman during the Depression, and she raised four kids, and she came out here to Sacramento, like probably in the late 50s, early 60s. And I think she had just started college when the Depression hit. And so she had to quit college, drop out. And then she got pregnant and had kids. And, it was like life just kept happening. And I'd always heard the story about her. She died when I was quite young, so I never got the information. But the family history was that she had been really involved with the Aerojet, but we were supposed to put a man on the moon, right? And so was involved with the Titan rocket engines before we went to the next level of the Apollo. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. What happened? Well, then she passed away, and nobody knew the real story. And I always wanted to write that story. I just didn't have the information. And when I got to UCLA, they have the Alfred Sloan Science Screenwriting Program. So Sloan finances these programs. They're competitions and students can submit. They have all kinds of different grants that they offer. This happened to be the one if you were a student. You compete against colleges all over the United States. And so I submitted the idea of what I wanted to write without knowing how I was possibly even going to attack it. And I was accepted. So they accept only so many, right? And then you have to write the story. And what's cool was they hook you up with a science expert. So I was my first year at UCLA. And remember, I told you I had structure issues, right? So I'm like, I don't know, whatever. We'll see how this works out. I already knew I had the issues. And so I got hooked up. They accepted that. I got hooked up with a Jet Propulsion Laboratory, JPL guy, scientist. And he was amazing because as I'm telling him the story about my grandmother, I had already started doing research and I had started researching the Apollo engines. And, you know, if it's anything, like, who wants to just spend their time learning rocket science? I did not, but mm-hmm. I had to learn something because I wasn't sure how I was going to solve the problems that she faced. And I had to understand it. And then I meet with him and he tells me, your grandmother, her age, based on the time she was there, it was the Titan engines. And plus I had started calling around. I'd started calling like all the old timers from Aerojet. I'm like, hey, did you know Mary Smith? Did you know? It was crazy what I was doing just to get information. So it was really great to have that insight because he gave me this background of history that I didn't know. Okay. And then this is what happened. This is the best part. This is not the best part. There was a death in the family and I had to come home and it was over the holidays. Yeah, we all hung out before the service. And this friend of our family, she'd been like an aunt to me all my life. She had passed away and her brother was there. And he's like, what have you been up to? I'm like, yeah, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. I'm working on a story about my grandmother, you know, and what happened when she was at Aerojet. He's like, oh my gosh, Dawn, I remember the night your grandmother came over. I sat there with my dad and your grandmother and she told us the story. I'm like, what?
Wow.
And I got all the information from him. I know, right? Wow. Isn't that amazing? And it wasn't just one problem, it was two. I'm like, hallelujah, hallelujah.
That's great.
Right? Because you have like so structurally two problems was way better than just one. And my grandmother had Parkinson's and when she was, you know, young Parkinson's, they didn't treat it really there. So I had that in the story idea, but it was him being able to give me the information that I was missing that made all the difference. Now I went back to my science advisor and said, okay, here's the deal. This is what the problem was. And then he was like, okay, so now here's the deal. Here are the ways this could have happened, da, 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 da. So then it was, I finished it and I think I did two drafts, like, boom. Yes, hello, structure. I did it, two drafts. and then I won. I won the Sloan Science screenwriting thing. So it was cool that, I think I'm really proud of that just because it was a story about my grandmother. It was one of my first real scripts and it was about science and family. And my mom read it and cried.
Oh, that's like, awesome. Did. That's awesome. It's really great that you could create something new based on something that was near and dear to you. That something mm-hmm. is a loved one and their experience. So, and I think it's amazing that you had this relative just come out of the blue and have this missing piece of information because that doesn't happen very often. So going back to like that faith-based element in your screenwriting, like that's a miracle, right? That's awesome. Well, Dawn, this has been a great discussion. Always love talking to you and working with you. You know, I admire you as a writer, but also as a person. You're very genuine, intelligent, down to earth, and warm. And so I always appreciate working with you in any and all capacities, and I hope to continue to do that. So I really thank you again for being here tonight. But before we sign off, do you have any parting words for our audience?
Well, first of all, thank you, Sam. Thank you for saying that. That's so nice of you. I feel the same way about you. So I appreciate that. It makes me feel good. I want my time here on Earth to matter. And here's where I segue into those words. One of the things I have learned and am still learning in the last couple of years is you can be really hyper-focused on achieving certain things. And that is not what matters ultimately. Ultimately, it comes down to the experience that you have here on Earth every day and what you're doing and how you connect with other people. So put that first. It's been very hard for me. And that's going forward. I always want that to be the first thing that matters most is that experience and that connection. And when you have that connection, you're going to find the people that resonate with you. And then the second thing is don't waste any time. Don't waste time. It's fleeting. It goes by in the blink of an eye. It is gone before you know it. And you want both of the experiences of connecting with people and doing the thing that you love to do in life to propel you forward. And I said earlier that you can have a vocation. but ultimately it's where your avocation and your vocation meet that you experience what life should be, you know? And so don't get so hyper-focused on just having to achieve. Find the thing that you love most in life and connect with the people that you care about most. Then you're going to be a great writer because you can use that.
Right. And I think that advice applies to like whatever creative endeavor you're involved in or you're interested in. So we're talking about writing, transformational screenwriting, but it could apply to a visual artist. It could apply to a music artist. Hey, I'm going to throw in like science is it's science. It's serious. It's scary, but it's also you got to be creative there too to solve like these world problems that arise. So whatever you want to do, don't waste the time. Don't waste the time.
Right. Yeah. I wish I'd known like it. I did know when I was 20 what I wanted to do, but I didn't think it was possible.
True. I think we all have a little bit of that. It's like, you know, especially when we have families that love and support us, but they don't know that route. My parents,
they
knew to work. They knew to get your education. They also kind of encouraged us to be entrepreneurs, but how to get there was something that we had to learn. And so it was like, we're kind of encouraging you to have this baseline start, right, with your education. Strive for something a little more, but you got to figure out how to do it yourself. And so,
You can always turn to the people like you and find your tribe. You know, you find that tribe and find mentors, and you're going to find the way in. I think it's just being creative, figuring out how to be creative and to make that happen. But if you're there, it's going to happen. Oh, I also want to say, don't be precious. That's another piece of advice.
Yeah,
I like that. That should be another book. Don't be precious.
Don't be precious. That could be your next one.
You'll get so much more done.
Yeah, I agree. All right, audience, we're gonna sign off. Audience, make sure we go check out the Creative Seat website. We'll have Dawn's bio on there. We'll have the link to this episode so you can find out more about her. We're going to be looking forward to reading your novel when it's available. We're going to be looking forward to feature film when it is released. I'm really excited about those two things.
You're going to be one of my beta readers.
Yes, I'll be the
beta reader.
I'll definitely do that. So if you're interested, you can reach out to me and I'll connect you to Dawn. So we'll talk about that. And I'll also put it on the website. And then if you're in the Sacramento area and you're interested in taking the workshop, you want to register via Access Sacramento. So accesssacramento.org, I believe, is the website. And you can find them online. There are some great people. So definitely check that out. And we're going to sign off. Thank you, Dawn.
All right. Thank you, Sam. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon. Have a great year.
You too. Thank you. Creativity. It's like learning to ride a bicycle. You get on it, you fall a few times, then one day you're riding along with all the confidence. Then you decide to learn a new trick. Make sure to like the episode and leave a review. Shout out to Dub Poet Production for the music. Samantha Gay Henderson signing off. Go do something creative.